Okay, we are not live.
Love
We're just talking to each other, and you won't hear her, okay?
Okay.
All right, so thank you for being on the show. I have your information here. It's very straightforward, very easy to ask the questions.
Okay.
Now, I just want to know the right way to say your name, though.
Keisha Gaither.
Keisha Gaither, very good. And I'm going to introduce you as a double certified physician, OBGYN, maternal fetal medicine in New York City. Am I correct?
Correct.
And if you want to, I will ask if you want me to for your website and send the listeners to the website.
Sure. www.keishagaither.com.
Keishagaither.com. Yeah, I see it right here. So I'm going to go pretty much the party line here of introducing the topic. We have two sections together. The first one would be the facts and the fiction. The second one would be the treatment. Okay?
Okay.
Very much down the line. Now, what I wanted to ask you, and it's a funny thing, I just saw my OBGYN yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I saw her was issues in my family of ovarian cancer or uterine cancer, and they didn't know which it was. This was so many 50 years ago. We never knew which type of cancer it was, but the person passed away within 18 months. So we think it must be ovarian. And so one of the questions I'm going to ask is, how not to mix that up and just understand the difference between that. But I'll do that in the second segment because I want to get all the ideas about the facts and the fiction out first. Okay?
Okay. All right. Well,
all right.
I can. Okay.
You go ahead. Finish. Sorry.
No, I was going to say that ovarian cancer is kind of a silent killer. There aren't any symptoms really until, you know, almost it's too late. Whereas uterine cancer, depending on the type, you do have it presents with abnormal bleeding, particularly in the most postmenopausal state.
Yeah. All right. So that we can – that's very succinct and excellent, and we'll do that, as I say, the second, because I don't want to mix up my issue with what's going on right here. There's plenty to say about the uterine fibroids. Okay, Stuart, we are all ready.
In the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
Yeah, maybe he sees hair on his head, not his shoulders, because he's in denial. But today, we are not going to Egypt. We are not in denial. Ha-ha, you got that one. But we are going to talk about not being in denial. And we have with us today, we have two fantastic guests. And as I always so proud of this show, this is Adrian Berg, and if you're tuning in, you know by now that this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, and it's the Fountain of Truth about aging. And in our second part of our show, we're going to be talking about how to create inspiration from some of the negative things that happen to us as we age. In the first part of our show, we have a prominent physician, Dr. Keisha Gaither. She is, of course, an OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist in New York City. We'll tell you how to find her. And this double board certified physician is going to unpack some of the myths and some of the treatments about uterine fibroids. Now this, you know, people say, uterine fibroids, well, where should I turn to get a music station? But let me tell you, this is your issue. Generation Bold is your show. And if you go to generationboldradio.com, you can put in some of the things that are bothering you. And this is one of the things that are bothering you. And so we got the expert for it. I don't know if you know, but the vast majority of American women may have fibroids. And as we get older, this is one of the things that could come into our life. We get scared. And I want to humanize this right before I introduce the doctor. I have a friend who's 75 years old. We go everywhere. She's the most active person on earth. She does not go to a doctor. She says, I don't want to know. I've actually lived long enough. Let anything happen to my body that's going to happen. Well, that's frankly not the philosophy of this show. The philosophy of this show is hands-on health. And that's why Dr. Gaither is going to help us with that. If you are trying to understand these risks, if you are looking at your body, if you care about issues of OBGYN, this is the right shop for it. So thank you so much, Dr. Gaither, for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I truly appreciate it.
Well, I can't say we're going to have a high old time, but I'm going to say that we're going to get some real good information out. Now, I think we're going to unpack this first by understanding what uterine fibroids are all about, why we may be detecting it as we age, and the phenomenal number of Americans who are subject to this. 80% of African-American women will have this. 70% of Caucasians. I mean, that's a big wow. So what actually is this? What is a fibroid when it comes to the uterus?
Okay, a fibroid or a myoma, as they are called medically, is a benign muscular tumor of the uterus. No one knows why they present themselves. However, there is an association with genetics, and certainly what we do know about them is that they love estrogen. They are estrogen dependent. They utilize estrogen to grow.
So this obviously is not a man's thing, but it certainly is a husband's thing if they're worried about their wives or their significant others or girlfriends. Are there symptoms?
Yes, there can be symptoms depending on where the fibroids are located and how they are pressing on a particular organ. Fibroids typically enlarge your uterus. And again, depending on where they are, and I will just kind of mention the different types of fibroids. You have something that's known as an intramural fibroid, and these are the most common. They appear within the muscular wall of the uterus, and they can basically grow and, you know, stretch your uterus so it just looks kind of like a lumpy, bumpy mass. You have subserosal fibroids. Your uterus, you can think of it as having an external skin called the serosa. So these little fibroids grow right underneath the covering or the covering lining of your uterus. You have something that's known as a pedunculated fibroid, where these tumors kind of develop and they can kind of look like, you can think of it as a grape on a stalk. Type of fibroid. And then you have the submucosal fibroids, which kind of impede or grow into the inside lining of your uterus. Now.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask this question. I think people are trying to visualize this and saying, yuck. And I know that I have had two cesareans, and they said, oh, there's a fibroid. We're going to take it out. Don't worry about it. And I never did worry about it. But can these fibroids become cancerous, and of the ones that you mentioned, is one more likely to or against another?
Fibroids are unlikely to become cancerous. This rarely happens. And should a fibroid suddenly begin expanding rapidly, at that point there would be a concern that maybe this is a particular type of cancer known as a leiomyosarcoma, and they present themselves by having extensively growing and rapidly growing mass within the uterus. But
so
just
most
having
of
a fibroid,
of
it doesn't... I'm sorry?
Yeah, so one of the myths is that it will continue to grow, because it may not continue to grow. So the question on this one is, what do you do? Should you follow it? Should you have them taken out, as I did? But I had it taken out only because I was having a cesarean anyway. Do you leave it alone, and how do you follow it?
Well, unless they cause problems, and particular problems would be excessively heavy menstrual bleeding, any pain on any pressure over your rectum such that it impedes having a normal bowel movement, or they have grown to the point where they're pressing on your bladder and it becomes uncomfortable, or if they grow to the point where you're having difficulty even breathing. And the last one, if you're having difficulty conceiving, at that point you would want to have them treated. But most fibroids that don't cause any problems, they will continue to grow until menopause. Menopause is dominated by the fact that your estrogen levels drop. And since fibroids like estrogen, once the estrogen supply decreases, their size will decrease as well. They won't grow anymore.
So, you know, in the field of beauty, and you'd think, how am I going to make that connection between uterine fibroids and beauty? But the fact is that one of the new treatments, doctor, is taking more estrogen, and that's way after menopause. That's for my folks that are in their 60s, 70s, even 80s. People are taking estrogen for beauty, hormonal replacements, all kinds of stuff. Does that mean that that might resurrect this possibility of getting fibroids even after, because we're putting new estrogen levels in our body for other reasons?
Potentially, yes. However, the estrogen that is given for hormone replacement therapy is relatively low. But there is theoretically a chance that if you, you know, have a number of fibroids, they may grow.
Interesting. Now, ultrasound, I know, and I was explaining during our little meeting this morning, that I'm looking at ovarian cancer very carefully. I may even take genetic testing because there was one in my family, just one. So what do? They say, well, get an ultrasound test. Is that the same thing? Is that the best test for these fibroids? Should that be a pelvic ultrasound? I know that it's probably the common method for other things.
A pelvic ultrasound is usually one of the first things that are ordered to actually take a look at your uterus. However, to have something that's known as an MRI is probably a better modality, because the MRI can actually take slices through your uterus to see where these fibroids particularly are located. So again, you know, ultrasound is the primary or the first line, but if there is a desire to see specifically where these fibroid tumors are, MRI would be the better modality.
So in our second segment, we're going to talk about treatments and how it's treated and whether we should get our medications and hormones and so on. But just very quickly, uterine cancer, is that a separate type of cancer from a cancerous fibroid, which you're kind of telling us is not the usual case? Or is uterine cancer the rare occasion that a fibroid becomes cancerous?
Well, there are different types of cancers. Leiomyosarcoma, where it arises from a fibroid, is one particular type, but there are other types of uterine cancer.
So for those of you who are listening and have any concern about this at all, there is a website, KeishaGaither.com, except that she doesn't spell her name easily. It's www.KeishaGaither, the doctor's name. KeishaGaither. Don't you go away. We're going to have treatment, and then we're going to have inspiration. We'll be right back.
I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, so we're off now. They're putting some commercials in. And that was very, very nice. We're really getting the information out. I think that's what's important here.
Good.
Is there
great.
Yeah, no, it's great. I want to go on to, I'm going to promote, we'll say, your website. But is there any book or any material that they should be reading? Anything that you have created? And if not, if there's an article, even if it's a maybe a professional one, we can always post it on our blog for them.
Well, certainly the article that I wrote, you know, the News Release Center About myths and misconceptions about uterine fibroids. I think that kind of, you know, gives them an overview of what they are, how they present themselves, what the treatments are. That's a good
review.
And where
do they find that one? Is that online?
Yeah. You know, they can Google myths and misconceptions about uterine fibroids, you know, after my name. Mm-hmm.
Good. And again, if you want to send anything to me, we can put it on our blog. Okay?
Okay.
So I will announce that. And we're ready to go. Now we're going to go through the second part of what was sent to me. And that was about how are they treated. All right? All right.
Right.
Let's do it. We are ready. We are ready. Now we have to be quiet for 10 seconds.
Okay.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
Well, we hope that here at Generation Bold, we have given you one less thing to worry about, and that is by giving you a really good understanding of uterine fibroids, which, you know, is nothing to ignore because 70% of Caucasian women, 80% of African American women have this, and they will be non-cancerous. You may not even know you have it, and it's okay, but we want to help you if it's not okay as well. Now remember, Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, is something that I've created over the past 5 years now for one and only one reason, to get difficult-to-find information out to the public so that we all can experience aging as this stage in life that's really delicious. When we come back after this segment, we're going to be talking about how to make some of the things that aren't so great in aging inspirational and actually help you move forward in your life. And for today, we are speaking right now with Dr. Keisha Gaither. I was giving you her website, but I want you to know how to spell her name for a different reason. Take this down, listen to this, and you'll see why. Her website is www.keisha, KeishaGaither. If you will have that name, and of course, it's always on our website, generationboldradio.com, beginning on Wednesday. Everything that we're doing today is going to be archived, including that website. You will be able to just simply Google her name, and you'll get articles on this that she's written in a very, very sensible way. No scare, no fear. But, doctor, sometimes people do have to get some treatment for this. And if it's deemed necessary, there's a lot of different things that they can do. We want to unpack some of those things to see what might be right and what they should be asking their doctors. So let's start with the idea of medication. What's the medication drugs of choice when it comes to this?
Well, depending on where the woman is in her life cycle and whether or not she may or may not wish to maintain her fertility will kind of dictate the type of therapy that can be offered to her. There's something known as progestin-releasing intrauterine devices, which can be inserted into the uterus. What these things do is they block the hormone, they block hormonal influences to the fibroid, which kind of lessens their ability to cause heavy bleeding. So that might be a modality that can be offered. There are medications that can be taken by mouth. They are known as gonadotropin-releasing hormones. Basically, they bring on symptoms of menopause by slowing the fibroid growth. And these medications reduce the painful periods and the heavy bleeding that the fibroids can cause. Yeah.
I'm always amazed with my age group here, the difference in menopause. I mean, we have people the same age that have been out of menopause, postmenopausal for a decade, and others that are still getting their hot flashes. And by the way, many write to me that they are totally out of menopause and they're still getting the hot flashes. So who knows what stage they're in. For the older adult, let's say, who doesn't care anymore about conceiving, isn't concerned with menopause, what would you say their doctor might lead them to in terms of treatment?
Well, you know, if you're in menopause, your estrogen levels are low, and the fibroids do tend to shrink. Now, having said that, if they're still large enough that they're impeding certain internal organs like your rectum or your bladder, causing issues with bowel movements and urination, then and you have no further desire or you're out of the age range to conceive, then a hysterectomy might be offered. A myomectomy might be offered, where just the fibroid in and of itself is removed. Depending on whether the fibroid is just, it's just maybe one fibroid in a uterine cavity, there might be a procedure known as a hysteroscopy, where you can go in through the cervical canal and look into the endometrial cavity, and then you have a little instrument which has like a laser on it, which will laser off the fibroid. So those are all types of surgeries that can remove fibroids.
So let me ask you a related but a broader question. We hear big stars like Angelina Jolie, they're going to have their ovaries removed, they're going to have their mastectomies for their breasts. They're so frightened because their genetics show that they are subject to cancers. Is this type of thing, because you did mention hysterectomy, removing both the uterus, maybe even the ovaries, is this something that people should do, as she has done, without any indication but the genetics or family history, in your opinion? Because it's getting more and more prevalent, particularly for women who are of a certain age that don't care about having children. What's your take on this?
Well, I think that the genetics of ovarian cancer and those of uterine cancer are very different. So prophylactic surgery for ovarian cancer is not necessarily the same treatment that would go for uterine cancer. I think there is definitely a firm association with genetics and ovarian cancer. I can't say that there is the same with uterine cancer.
That's interesting. And although we have a couple of minutes only, I thought there might be, only because of the number difference in the African-American community, that there might be some genetic connection. But we have many researchers here, Dr. Gaither, who are guests on our show, and they're doing research just on that kind of thing. You know, what's connected, what isn't. So what you're telling us, that the ovarian connection with genetics is much stronger right now, and the uterine may not be there. So that's an interesting thing for people to know. If they're contemplating this because of uterine, maybe they ought to be thinking twice about it, a little bit more heavily than with the ovarian.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I do want to mention to everybody, again, in the last couple of seconds of our discussion with Dr. Gaither, is that there are ever-increasing ways of taking care of this, from medication to the progesterone releases that she mentioned, to endometrial ablation, which I know the word ablation from people that have tachycardias and heartbeats. We've had doctors on that have done ablation treatments to the heart. Also possible for the uterus. I mean, these are things that just didn't exist before. So if any of you are not seeing your gynecologist, shame on you. That's what I have to say, right? And please take a look at www.keciagaither.com. And just because you're not in the age group where you're conceiving doesn't mean that you don't need a gynecologist more than ever. Thank you so much, doctor.
Thank you so much for having me.
We will be back. We're going to get uplifted. Don't go anywhere. And I don't mean a face lift. I mean a heart lift.
For my age. Da, 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 da. Da, 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 da.
Hello?
Okay. so we are off now. They're doing the commercials, and they're going to get on our
okay.
So you see how
all
that
right.
works?
Thank
pretty good,
so
right?
Thank
Isn't that
you.
Fun?
Yes, it was fun. Yes, it was. So thank you again for having me. Greatly appreciate
wonderful.
It.
So you,
you
know
have a
that
wonderful
you'll be.
Day.
Thank you. I just want you to repeat that. This will be heard on Saturday. And on some in some stations, most stations, 10 o'clock Sunday morning. There is an app called BizTalk, BizTalk. It's free
mm-hmm.
if you want to listen to yourself on your phone. You can do that on Sunday
mm-hmm.
at 10.
Okay.
And other in other states, people are just turning on the regular radio to hear it. And then by Wednesday... it'll be Tuesday because we're leaving on Wednesday. It'll be archived on the on GenerationBoldRadio.com. And it'll stay there. Radio.
Okay.
And,
Thank you so much.
You'll be also be on the front page. You'll be on the home page, I should say.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Very good. Now, I can't hang up, but you have to because I stay on to stay connected to our technology here. Okay?
Okay. All righty then. Thanks so much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. You want to say hello? You want to say hello?
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 Yes, hello?
Hello? Hello, this is Lynn Wells speaking.
Lynn Wells, thank you so much for calling. Are you calling from Australia?
That's right, I am.
Okay, excellent. So we have this. There's a slight time delay. So I'm saying it to you, and I'm also saying it to Adrian, our host, that you just give each other a time to finish the sentences because there's a small delay between the time one person finishes and the other person hears the finish.
Yes, yeah, that's fine. I was told that.
Okay, very, very good. And I'll put Adrienne on, and she'll talk to you and get set. And we're doing two segments, one segment of 11 minutes, the other segment of 8 minutes.
Okay, great. Yep.
Great. Thanks for being our guest. Here's Adrienne.
Thank you.
Hello, Lynette. How are you?
Hello. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very good. And you are in Adelaide, am I right?
I am, yes.
I have been
South
there twice.
Australia.
Yeah, I've been there a time. I have, and I've collected some beautiful Aboriginal paintings from there. And I don't think
lovely,
that... The Flying Doctors is not too far from there, is it?
Oh, yeah, they do a Flying Doctor service here, yeah.
I visited their headquarters. I didn't need them as a doctor, but I visited their headquarters, and... Fantastic.
Oh, lovely. So you know a little bit about where I am.
Yeah. So we are not on yet. We're just talking to each other right now. And as Stuart said, there's a 7-second delay. So I will be quiet, and then you'll talk, and then I'll be quiet again.
Yep.
But basically, we just talk normally. Don't get too involved.
Okay.
What happens at the end of the segment is music begins to play. And I'm already talking, and I work with the music. Should you hear music, just finish your sentence, that's all. Okay. So I've read the information on your book. I know how to introduce Moon, Shadows, Flowers, and Butterflies. What a beautiful title. But obviously I'm going to ask you about that title, right, and how you came up with it. That's going to be one of my questions.
Yeah.
I'll ask you a bit about your journey with your husband and your mother. And I will ask about how you played out some of that loss. You should know that for children who've lost their parents early in life, I'm a grief facilitator. That's not my profession.
Okay.
That's a volunteer.
Yep.
I'm a volunteer with that, something in the U.S. called Good Grief. And my my listeners, they know that, so that'll relate to it.
Yep.
Now, of course, I'm going to promote the book. So I'll say it's available at Balboa Press, but mostly I'm going to mention Barnes & Noble and Amazon.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. Good. Now, is there any specific thing that you would like me to bring out that I haven't actually mentioned to you?
No, I think that's pretty relevant what you've actually said. So that will cover basically, yeah, quite a bit of the book.
Excellent. All right, so we'll get through this in two segments. And anything that we didn't cover properly in the first one, we always have a chance in the second, so there's no problem.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
All right,
sounds
so
right,
we
yeah.
are ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit, I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, da, da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, and it's the Fountain of Truth, and that Fountain of Truth is about aging. And what I promised you in the first segment that we would be doing in the second one was a very big promise. I promised that we would have an uplifting seminar, and then I made a joke saying I didn't mean an uplift for your face, I meant an uplift for your heart. And we surely will do that. I'm going to make good on my promise because I have here a fantastic author, Lynette Wells. She's with us all the way from Adelaide, Australia. And if Adelaide is not on your bucket list, put it on your bucket list. I've been there twice. Fascinating place. And she's written a fascinating book. It's called Moonshadows, Flowers and Butterflies by Lynette Wells. Obviously available Barnes & Noble and Amazon from Balboa Press. Now, this has to do with her journey through overcoming some very difficult life-changing events, the kind that, for better or for worse, are going to happen to all of us. And how she did it, and how you may be able to look forward to what I call strengthening the inspiration muscle in times of grief. So let's say hello first to Lynette and learn a little bit about this fascinating title. Lynette Wells, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to unpack that title. I mean, it's very poetic. Moon shadows, flowers, and butterflies. How did that title come to you when you were doing this inspirational examination of how creativity can help people overcome some of the toughest life experiences they'll ever have? How did that title come
to you? Actually, it was the last part of the book to actually come together with the cover and the title. I had put all the book together and then I needed some artwork to put on the cover, and as I was flicking through some of my artwork that I had done a little bit after I'd gone through the grief process, this one just jumped out at me, and I thought that has to be my cover photo. And that's where the actual title came from, because all of these images in the cover picture on the book are included in the actual book. They're images that actually spoke to me during my grief process. So it was very appropriate for me to actually choose that particular title at the time and the picture to go with it.
Now, the kind of modalities that you use to overcome tough times can be used for any kind of crisis issues. As we age, we lose people. We lose parts of our bodies sometimes. Sometimes we simply lose our home. We end voluntarily, so we move. And we don't realize the grief that that caused. So let's talk about your journey, though. Tell us a little bit about your story that prompted you writing the book.
My husband went through cancer. He had a 10-year battle with cancer, and I cared for him the last probably 5 years of his life because, you know, it was really quite serious at that point. And I hadn't painted for quite some time going through that process, but I had, prior to that, completed a diversional therapy course because I was volunteering at a community centre here where I live for people who had health issues and isolated in the community. And I think that gave me a lot of insight into how you could actually deal with difficult situations in your life working with these people. And I think after he passed away, my mum passed away within 6 weeks to the date afterwards suddenly, And that's what really put me in a very difficult spot with my emotional self, because I didn't understand the grief process at that point. I didn't understand how to understand it, how to talk about it, how to express it. It was just really completely overwhelming for me. And that's when I just sat down one night and just decided to paint something. I didn't have any idea what. It was just I had to paint something. And that's where the first picture came about, and nothing was planned. It was just I painted, and the images just almost presented themselves to me. And
now, how long between the time that you had these double whammies, the two deaths, and the time that you were motivated by something, moved by something to paint?
It was. It was only a few months after that, because, and just talking, the people would sort of, you know, I was chatting to people about grief who had been through the process, but just the talking didn't really move me along. I just couldn't really express what I was feeling at the same time. Mine seemed to be more intense than what I was actually hearing. And I just needed to find something for myself to so that I could actually understand it. And being an artist as well, I'm more quite a visual person, and art speaks to me. So I found that was my way. My art gave me a voice to express my emotion at that time.
Yeah, now, culturally,
really,
it's very interesting. And I want to bring us to Australia for a moment. Everybody who listens to my show, I hope, knows that as a volunteer, I'm a grief facilitator for kids who lost their parents early in life. And I'm one of those people. I lost my dad when I was 11. It was very sudden. And I've carried grief with me for a very long time. So I have maybe a particular fascination with the process of grieving. And there's an organization called Good Grief in this country. Now, in this country, the big problem with grief is we don't show it. Even though it was 50 years ago and times have changed, I was sent back to school very quickly. Drop a father, go to school. We have that here. That's ours still. It hasn't changed much, I learned from the children that I work with. What about Australia? Does Australia have the same kind of culture where, you know, you suck it up, everybody loses, move on, take a vacation, or is there more of a process there?
No, we definitely do have that culture as well. And that's how I was brought up. You just get over it. You don't let it linger. You just life goes on. You just have to, just like you said, suck it up and just move on. But I could not do that, and I couldn't understand why I could not do that, because that's how I was brought up, to deal with difficult situations. And that's why I struggled so much, because it just wouldn't go away. And I just couldn't understand why not, you know? So yes, our culture is very much the same, and that's what makes it really hard when you are dealing with something so intense, and you really need to find some way of actually moving past that and understanding it for yourself.
You know, Moon Shadows, Flowers and Butterflies, that's the book that we're talking about here, and you can find that on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Balboa Press. The author here is Lynette Wells, very open, very willing to talk to us. So you said, I couldn't talk about it. And here you are on the radio talking to a lot of people about it. Is that what opened you up, the therapeutic creativity through painting? I think that's an important...
Oh, definitely, yes. Definitely, because I could not speak about it. I couldn't find the words to express what I was feeling, because it was just so deep and so intense. And as soon as I started painting and I saw the flowers and, you know, the bubbles and the moon and everything, it just gave me the voice that I needed so that I could actually write what I was actually feeling. And that was so...
You know, in the good grief process with the children, when I was first getting my training, I was shocked to see how much creativity was included. In other words, there's always arts and crafts. There's always making a plate or making a puppet or whatever. At all age groups, by the way. And it's what they care about the most. So I really want you to encourage the listeners. You are an artist, but most people listening are not. How do they find their creativity for this, if this is the right way for them to express their grief? Surely you don't have to be an artist, I'd say.
No, you don't have to be an artist, definitely not. I've actually worked in palliative care, and I worked with a lot of people at a local hospital after I had put this book together, and I was working with people in bereavement, and there's many genres that can be used as far as creating goes. I mean, some of them just cut pictures out of magazines that related to the person that they had lost, and words that followed, because a lot of magazines have got quite big words there, and they just made these beautiful collages up all of, you know, magazine cuttings and the words to follow, to help them express some part of their emotion relating to the loved one that they had lost. Other times we picked flowers in the garden, and they flowers and leaves, and they painted those and just printed them onto paper in different colours into a design that they wanted as a form of expression. Sometimes we just splashed paint onto a board and then put a another piece of paper over the top and printed off of that.
Yeah, and you know,
and
with
it was
the
amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing what comes out of it. Some of it is great art, and we're going to talk about that, the transformation that could take place in our next segment. And with the kids, by the way, we just give them day glow paint, and they're in a special room where we don't care what happens, and they throw the paint all around. So, I mean, there's anger, too, and that kind of expression.
That's right.
Anger. We'll be back. We're going to unpack this a lot more, and we're going to show you how you can get breakthroughs in small crises in your life. Day-to-day stuff with just what our author, Lynette Wells, suggests. We'll be back. Okay, we are off. We're going to put commercials in. So you see how this is going, right? Before we go back, you've written this book. Is there another book coming? Is there a next steps here?
Yes, there is another book that's in process at the moment.
Are we allowed to... I want you to say that, but are we allowed to know a title or what the slant will be? Or is it undercover?
I haven't actually got the title quite sorted out, but it's a bit of a story about... It's still about what my situation and what with my husband, but a lot of very, how can I put it, the way my journey with him played out was really quite different. It's almost like it was a guided journey that I had to have.
I see.
It was definitely a life lesson for me because I was taken completely out of my comfort zone in all areas of my life. And that's what the story is going to be more about.
So it's really about the caretaking part and what it meant to your life. So I'm going to
right from beginning to end. Like, you know, so many dates were significant. You know, I mean, my birth date came up so many times when he had to have major surgery or got results back, and just so many different unusual things happened. They were really quite positive in a lot of ways. It really just guided me forward, you know, and gave me the strength to cope with what I was coping with.
Now, I wanted to make the major part of this next segment, and that is you've suffered two very difficult things very quickly.
Yeah.
But things happen to all of us almost every day. I found out that I shrunk. I went to my regular doctor and I shrunk. And there's nothing wrong with me. They said, you know, you get older, you shrink. Who wants to shrink? Maybe I need to shrink. But the point is, I believe that creativity gets us through a tremendous amount of this. So I do want to bring this to the inspirational part of this, where we can incorporate what you're talking about in the grand scheme of things into our little minutia by minutia. All right? And so I'm interested next to ask you, what do you do with it now? Now that you're an author, now that your grief process is known and understood to you, how much therapeutic art are you doing now?
Yeah, I'm doing quite a bit still.
Good. So I want to relate that.
I paint quite a bit. You know, it's something that is relaxation for me, and it's something that speaks to me, and my art really, I know when I'm... by what I'm feeling, by what I paint. Sometimes it's very structured, other times it isn't. So,
got it. Right, we're ready, Stuart. Okay, good. All right, we got it all. We're all ready. This is our last segment, right?
Yes.
Okay.
may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And we're here with a fantastic author. She's hailing, and you'll hear right away from the accent, from Adelaide, Australia, a town I've been to a couple of times, and you ought to put it on your bucket list. And she's written a wonderful book. It's called Moon Shadows, Flowers, and Butterflies, and she reveals to us that as she was finishing the book, one of the paintings that she wanted for the front cover were really of moon shadows, flowers, and butterflies. Her name is Lynette Wells. The book is available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and it is her journey through a grief process by using something she was very familiar with as a professional, helping people get through different kinds of emotional issues through art. And she explains to us you don't have to be an artist. She unpacked some of the ways, simple ways that you can express yourself artistically, even from just taking things out of a newspaper or a magazine that remind you of your loss. Now, I want to introduce Lynette again, and we're going to talk about something a little bit different. There are great, great tragedies that happen as we age. We know that. But the things that we need to cope with that really give us sometimes the more constant stress are small things. There's a great book, everybody knows about it, you know, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and it's all small stuff. But as we get older, the small stuff seems like big stuff. And I know, Lynette, that one of the things that you do personally is you continue your art day to day. It becomes a process and a practice for you, maybe even a meditation. So and let's go back to those kinds of small things and how art has helped you cope and how you've seen it as a professional, helping other people, and how we can engender it and make it part of our day ourselves. And this art could be music. This art could be many, many things. It doesn't have to be that you're a great artist. So tell us about some of the things that you've seen or do for yourself that have made a difference.
Like you said, I paint whenever I get the chance to paint. So I just usually put some meditation music on when I paint. And I just, sometimes, like I said, it's very structured. I have a particular thing that I want to paint. Other times, I don't. So I just start with colour on the, you know, canvas and just let the colours flow, and then shapes appear, and then those shapes turn into different things. And that's what tells me a lot of the time what I'm feeling at the time. And that's how I read my art now. And I've seen this with people I've actually worked with. And there's a beautiful story I just want to relate to you. There was a man that came into the art group at the centre where I was working, and he was a dentist, and he'd had a professional man, he'd had a stroke, and he could not speak, and he'd never done any art before. And he came in, and I used to just take in little items for the people that wanted to, that were in the group, to copy or to take a print off from. And he always sketched things with a pencil. And he sketched the most amazing things each week. I had to challenge him with something a little bit more difficult, and everything was exactly the way it looked as he looked at it, to actually sketch it with a pencil. And he'd never done any art before in his life, and he was just so proud of himself for being able to do that. And he had a collection of artworks, but within the first 12 months of being within that group, that he framed and put up in his office at home. And it was just amazing to see someone who had never created anything before just come to life. And he just loved the afternoons just to be able to sit there and just create what he was feeling.
You know, on our show, we have had many folks who are in the field of gerontology. And there's a whole world of creativity as we age. In fact, there's the National Council of the Arts, which is being threatened now a little bit, does have a section just for elder artists. But I can't do anything. I'm the world's greatest spectator. I have not one fiber of talent in my body, but I have done what you said twice, where I've sat down with professionals like yourself, and I was the person that they were helping, all right? And I've painted. And honestly, the paintings are very, very dark. And I destroyed them. I want everyone to understand that these are important moments of my life, but I'm certainly not an artist.
Yes.
But the process was so important to me. So I just don't want people to think that they have to be like that dentist gentleman, where they may shine. But you could be like me, where everything you do absolutely stinks. But that's okay, because it's not for that purpose.
Everybody thinks that they need to be perfect at creating something. If you're not an artist or you're not a craft maker, and this holds a lot of people back because they really do think that they need to be perfect the first time they try something. But you don't have to be. You can put any colours on the page, and if it speaks to you, it's your artwork, and be proud of what you create. And that's what I was trying to get across. He had never done anything before, but it worked up to something very special to him, and he was quite fascinated that he could actually do it. You know, he didn't think that he could do anything when he first came into the group. And this happens with a lot of people.
That's the other thing, too. My husband, who is not, he sits outside when we go to the museum, let's put it that way. When he went through that process, his work was beautiful. So you cannot judge a book by its cover, and you can't judge yourself by how you've been in the past. When it comes to these moments of creativity that you bring into your life, and I know you'll be inspired if you read Lynette Wells' book, Moon Shadows, Flowers, and Butterflies. Now, I asked you, Lynette, what was next, whether you were doing another book, because I knew it. I could feel it. And tell everybody what you said to me.
I am it's in the process at the moment, and it's still about my journey with my husband, but it's about the other side of the journey, not so much focused on the illness, but focused on a lot of the amazing experiences I had during that time, because I really feel like I always felt that my journey with him was special, and it was a guided journey and a life experience for me that I had to go through to understand, because there were so many significant, well, my birthday was a significant date, and a lot of his health issues and just so many different things came up, you know, with events that happened at certain times and how we process things together, and it was just quite amazing. And I was taken so far out of my comfort zone going through the journey with him with his illness, because I do not like hospitals. I faint at the sight of blood, and I am not good nurse material, but I had to do all those things then. And I did, and I got the strength from someone to do that.
Yeah, life gave me, you know, when things get tough, the tough get going, but you never know how tough you are. So get out there, kid, and make it happen. Okay, we are now off, and that was terrific. I'm looking forward to the next book.
So
I know that's not... Yeah, do you have any prognosis for when it might be out?
I'm hoping to have in the next few months. I'm really hoping to get it to press. So hopefully by maybe the end of this year, early next year, it will definitely be out. And I have a website page coming.
Good. So when you do that, have your PR person or yourself let me know again, and we'll do something like this for the second book. Okay?
Sounds great, Adrienne. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you. What time is it over there?
It is now 11:30 at night.
11:30 at night. Go to sleep. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to... you have to hang up first, and then I hang up. All
okay.
Right?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Can I hang up, Sue?
Yes.